Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome all of you to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we are broadcasting once again from the beautiful Dillon State Park here in East Central Ohio. I'd like to remind you to press the follow button if you haven't done that, and you'll be notified 1 hour prior to the start of each show. The music you hear at the beginning and end of each show is performed by your host. It's open lines tonight, this first day of 2012. It's January 1st, 2012, and we're picking back up where we left off at the last Open Lines show. We're going to be talking about the movie, The Silent Revolution of Truth. It's a Michael Horn movie about, of course, the Billy Meier case. We're also going to cover some of the disturbing trends that are taking place in the United States. Things like activities related to Monsanto, to something called Codex Alimentarius, and we're also going to cover a little ground in Contact 215 of the Billy Meier case. But first of all, let's start with the Silent Revolution of Truth. Billy made trips with ASCET, including trips into the past and the future. If a person could really know the future, it would be a great burden. And Billy claims to have met a man named Emmanuel. And according to the Meyer material, the person that we call Jesus was actually called Emmanuel. And he lived some 2,000 years ago. And according to this material, he survived the crucifixion.
with Ascot, I traveled around and was also able to make various trips into the past with her and also into the future, but I don't want to talk about the travels into the future.
Aber über die Zukunftsreisen möchte ich nicht sprechen. Ich habe
I not only told friends, but also other people about the future, and some of them even misused that information and tried to make money from it and were sentenced and imprisoned.
Teilweise haben die das sogar missbraucht und haben das versucht, in Geld umzusetzen, wurden verurteilt und eingesperrt.
If a person could really know the future, it would be probably an enormous burden, depending on what we're talking about. But certainly if you saw events that were going to occur with certainties, however that would be possible, and these were negative events, disasters, etc., that would be a terribly disturbing thing. Knowing that one could not change or alter that would be enormously frustrating. He claims to have met a man called Emmanuel. And Emmanuel, according to the information in the case, would be the man who we know as Jesus Christ. Or at least the Jesus Christ figure would be, according to the Meyer material, a fictionalized version of a real man who lived 2,000 and some years ago, who indeed was crucified, but survived the crucifixion.
Als Emmanuel gelebt hat, der
When Emmanuel lived, who was later falsely named Jesus Christ, and who never had anything to do with the religion which was made from his teaching,
zu tun gehabt mit dem, was aus seiner Lehre als Religion dann entstanden ist.
Emmanuel was not an extraterrestrial. He was therefore a human being from this world, begotten by an extraterrestrial with a terrestrial woman named Mary, and was born here on the earth as an earth human.
Eine Frau namens Maria gezeugt und hier auf der Erde als Erdenmensch geboren.
And why did Ascot present you to him?
I don't actually want to say anything about that.
Nicht sagen.
What is the Talmud of Manuel?
The Talmud of Manuel is a document. It came about when Billy Meyer and Issa Rashid, who was a former Greek Orthodox priest, were led telepathically to an area outside of Jerusalem by the Pleiaron, and they found and dug their way into an abandoned ancient tomb. The stones on the floor, concealed for a while, for 2,000 years apparently, resin-encrusted, animal skin-wrapped scrolls, which they took out and removed from that location. When they opened up one, they found they were in Aramaic. So Issa Rashid took the scrolls, began a translation process. In something like 7 years, he sent Meyer about one-third of these scrolls, translated from the Aramaic, in which they originally were, into German. He let Meyer know that he was now virtually on the run with his family for their lives. He told Meyer that there were certain religious factions of a couple major religions that found out that he had these scrolls and that wanted to take possession of them themselves. The information would prove to be enormously heretical. After Issa Rashid had translated a chunk of them, he took them and his family into a refugee village in Lebanon, hid the scrolls in the walls. It's said that within about a week's time, the Israelis came in and destroyed the entire village. The scrolls were destroyed, along with many of the structures and people who lost their lives. Issa Rashid and his family escaped with their lives into Iraq. And 4 years later, Meyer found out that Issa Rashid and his entire family had been machine gunned to death, ostensibly by the Mossad in Baghdad. For instance, Emmanuel foretold the coming of another prophet. He named him as Muhammad. He claimed that while this man would be a true prophet, his teachings would also be corrupted and a false and evil cult would be created from them that would give the Israeli people, the distant descendants, no peace until the end of time, unless, hopefully, both the Israelis and their enemies could make a conciliatory and honest peace with each other. The Talmud of Emmanuel contains prophecies about the fires that would darken the sky when greedy and power-hungry people would ignite the very oil of the earth. The Talmud of Emmanuel was discovered in 1963. The fires from the Gulf War that darkened the skies did not occur until 1991, 18 years after the Talmud was discovered. There are two artifacts that are shown in this book that Meyer discovered in the tomb where the Talmud of Emmanuel was discovered. The first one was a small figurine that Meyer says was left by the Indian healers with Emmanuel, the men who came and ministered to him over those 3 days while he was sequestered in the tomb. The other artifact is a piece of gypsum that Gabriel allegedly gave to Emmanuel. Both of these were left for Meyer to discover, as he did, centuries later.
Als ich 1964 in Indien war, da
when I was in India in 1964, I lived in the Asoka Ashram outside of Morali with a monk named Dharmawara, from whom I also learned a great deal. It was then that the opportunity arose for the first time for me to photograph spaceships, that is to say, beam ships.
Große Möglichkeit gegeben war, dass ich Raumschiffe respektive Strahlschiffe fotografieren konnte.
And that is my grandfather when he was in his late 80s, and myself a year and a half before I left to come to the United States to pursue my university studies. As I continued my university studies, I have forgotten all about that contact. It never stayed in a place in my mind where it is utilized. I went on finishing my graduate work, went to help my country, became a diplomat, was sent back to New York to represent my country at the United Nations, worked at it for 12 years. One day I was cleaning and came across the book again. So I thought before I threw it away, I should look at it. I opened the page and saw the name Asoka Ashram. So I was wondering, how could our place be named in this book? As I browsed through it, I saw the stories. And immediately, I thought, I bet you it is the same Swiss person that had stayed at our place when I was a child. If he's the person that I knew, if he has a monkey, it's the same person. So Wendell wrote to him, and I think Wendell said within an hour, Billy wrote back.
Well, we do have a caller. 804, if you want to come on the air, please press 1. If you want to just listen and keep doing what you're doing, I need to bring you on the air if you don't want to be on the air. I think we do have a caller then. 804, state your name and where you're calling from.
JoJo, calling from Richmond, Virginia.
Well, hello, JoJo. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Are you?
Yeah.
Are you interested in UFOs or extraterrestrial life at all?
All of it.
Oh, great. Glad to hear it. Did you have...
go ahead.
Did you have something specific on your mind this evening?
Yes, I have two things. Well, right now, I was looking at Alex Collier. Yes, I've been studying a lot of his lessons, right? And I'm well familiar with Billy Myers too, and but Riley Martin, he kind of like on the borderline with me, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Riley Martin is an interesting guy. I haven't heard from him in a while. Didn't he have his own radio show? And he was pretty well known for a while, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. I like him, but you know, he just, you know, so humorous with his stuff, you know. So I don't really know how to take him too much, but I like him though.
Yeah. Was he on TV for a while?
I never saw him on TV. Now, this one of my questions. I experienced something real, real weird. I saw chemtrails come down out of the sky. Now, if you know anybody who saw what I saw, then you would know that I'm telling the truth.
Well, I tell you what, I was out at Washington State in July, out at Trout Lake, Washington. James Gilliland has a ranch out there, and he has like a conference out there every year. And during that conference, in the middle of the day,
let me tell you what I saw first, so you could see that
sure.
I'm telling the truth. Okay. I had just came in the house from, you know, coming from downtown somewhere. And soon I got in the house, I looked out the window. And I saw this stuff, and it scared me so bad, I was like, what is this stuff here? And I jumped from the window, and I was for like a couple of seconds. I'm like all toe to pieces. So I went back to the window and I just looked at it, you know, to study it. Now this is what I saw. It looked like the texture of it looked like spider webs, and it was like 3 inches long.
Really?
And it was, yes, it looked like it was just floating in slow motion. And some that thing looked like the wind would blow it. This was in the summertime, like July. This was 2006. And
really?
The stuff was, yes, it was the stuff was like 3 inches long, and it won't touch in each other. Know how you just draw lines down on the paper all over?
Mm-hmm.
That's how it looked, and it just looked so good. But I just saw it one time.
Now, what part of the country were you in when that happened?
Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, it was real good, you know, real
good. That
was
2006.
2006. I never saw it no more, you know.
You know, I was, like I was saying, I was out at Trout Lake, Washington, in Washington State, and there was a chemtrail. You know, they get real big when they come down low, and it came down to like 10 or 15 feet. And then there was this, like, huge gust of wind that just kind of blew it away. But that was the only one I've ever seen come that low. And it's pretty amazing. It's really horrible, actually. I mean, I can see blue skies here in Ohio. I mean, crystal clear blue. And then, gosh, in 20 minutes.
They're white.
They're white. Yeah, there's just lines all over the place.
We all see that form of it, but to see it come down and you see this stuff with the naked eye, it is really, really weird. And,
I bet it was weird. That freaked you out. Did anyone else see it, or were you the only one there?
I was the only one at home, and it was funny how I came home and was driven to the window. I never, you know, when I come in the house, I don't never usually just go straight to the window, you know. It was like I was driven to go to the window and look.
Could you smell anything?
No, the window was down. But you know what I wish I would have did? Stuck a cloth, you know, stuck something outside of the window to collect that stuff.
Right.
You know, but. It's,
did you go outside?
No, I was scared to go out.
Is that right?
And
did it kind of fade away eventually?
It was coming down like for like 30-35 minutes because, like I said, when I went to the window the first time, I looked at it for like 3-4 seconds, and I rushed from the window because I was like scared, like yuck, and I went back to the window and I looked at it for like 5 minutes. Then I went back doing what I was doing and just checking back and forwards, and that lasted for like 40 minutes. I like this stuff still coming down, and I could see the cars and the people walking and stuff, and they weren't feeling it.
Gosh,
they weren't feeling and touching it. Now I looked up. The Morgellons disease, right?
Yeah.
You saw the photographic pictures of the Morgellons, you know, the lesions that be on the people?
Right.
It looked like some kind of crystalline lesions or something, you know?
Yeah, I've seen things where it looks like there are almost like things growing out of these people.
Right, right. And then some of it looked like it's glass or crystal.
And sometimes like little wires or something.
Right. That too. It's like 50 different forms of this stuff, you know. No, but I'm just trying to come across somebody who saw what I saw. And
well, I think James Gilliland has talked about that, and you might look him up on YouTube. I think there have been times out there in Washington State where that stuff has come down on the ground as well.
Yeah, he says
when it comes down the ground like that, sometimes it'll affect him. Like he has trouble breathing and he feels like he's getting sick and things like that.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it ever came down on me. It might have was coming down when I was coming in the house, but I couldn't see it on that ground level like that. Because when I saw it, I had went upstairs. I saw it from the second floor window, you know, second story window, you know. And it looked like spider webs.
You know, last night when I had Nancy Red Star on, she said something really interesting. She said the people that are in control of the world right now are a death cult.
Yeah.
And I had never heard it put like that, but these people, they're poisoning everybody.
Everything, everybody.
It's unbelievable.
And you know another thing? Not to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's like this religion and prophecy. How do we know that the book is not manipulated? Because if you listen to anybody who is religious, they always talk about they want God to do their work. They just want God to come and do something that we're supposed to do ourselves. Here we done lost a good government. We done lost it. But the only thing we got left is protection of firearms. And
yeah.
The United Nations, they just as scared of us as we somewhat scared of them. I know I'm not, and I know the other patriots are not scared. But they're not going to get the United States like they got China and Russia and all the other countries. They're going to have to fight for this, and we're going to give them a fight. And I just wish people would deal with reality.
I hear you.
You know,
very, very good words. We need to be responsible for ourselves. And
don't nobody want to kill the devil or kill wickedness. You know, I want to kill the devil and destroy his wicked spirituality. But what they
said. I tell you what, I think we've got people in charge right now that are pretty evil. And it's a scary thing, man. I mean, we've got to work together and you know, I'm not a person that likes to be politically active, but I think at some level we're going to have to try a little bit of everything. Whatever we can get to work is what we're going to have to do, you know? I mean, we can't sit back and let these people get us any more wars. And we can't sit back and take these vaccinations that they're trying to give us. And like you're saying, we can't sit back and let them spray us, right?
Oh, no. You know, I believe in God, but I got to do my work. We got to be responsible and face the United Nations for who they are. We got to do this. And they're on our turf.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yes. And see, and this is another thing. All these high-level clearances, who are they that issuing these clearances? Because say, like, if you the president, you can't go to DOSA or S4.
Right.
Who is it that's in control of that branch of this, you know, all that exotic weaponry and alien back engineer technology?
Whoever the secret government is, it's not the government we know about. You're right. The president isn't in charge.
And see, Alex Collier. That's something that stuck with me. What he said is like, he said that it started with Eisenhower, that we, you know, all that organization went black. You know, all that technology was meant for humanity, but all of a sudden we lost it and it went black.
Yeah.
We funded it and financed it, but didn't benefit nothing from it.
That's a good point. Very, very good point. Well, Judge, I appreciate you calling in, man. You have to do this. I appreciate talking to you.
Oh, go ahead.
I said I appreciate talking to you. I hope you call back in again.
Okay, but look, see, could you get what his name? The young man who said he experienced the chemtrails, who saw what I saw.
Oh, you mean James Gilliland?
James Gilliland?
Yeah, Gilliland. I'll try to get in touch with him. I will. I've tried to get him on the show before, but I'll do it again. That's a real good suggestion. I will try that.
Cause see, once I start, converse with him on what I saw, we both could relate.
Absolutely.
I seriously saw this with my eyes.
It's real. I know it's
real.
It's very real. You know, you've inspired me, Judge. I'm going to play some clips from the last show where we talked about chemtrails a little bit.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. I appreciate that call, JoJo, and I appreciate you listening to the show, and I can't believe half an hour has gone by already. Where all the time go? My goodness, I'd like to thank After Dark Radio, Dale Ray 19, Eve One Heart. We've got about 6 anonymous people in the chat room, Jeff 72, Moonchild, RD 47, XM 007. Looks like RD 47 has made a very interesting chemtrail video from Arizona. Very interesting. He also says he's seen the spider webs before. And RD, if you want to call in tonight, it might be a good night to do that. The call-in number is 917-889-7099. Let's listen to this short introduction. There's a new movie out. It's called The Great Culling, and it talks about what the elite are trying to do.
There is a conspiracy theory that has many convinced they are slowly being poisoned. There is a movement growing worldwide by millions who are certain someone is spraying toxic chemicals on all of us.
We're joined now by 2 filmmakers producing The Great Culling. It is a follow-up to What in the World Are They Spraying? Great film on the geoengineering and chemtrail phenomenon. We have it here at the InfoWars store. That is director Paul Wittenberger. He's joined by first-time filmmaker, right, Chris Maple?
That's right.
Thanks for coming on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We don't feel like the government is telling us the truth, and every time we discover that they aren't, we are verified that the government is covering up too many things that are really important for us.
If you really convince me people were doing this, I'm serious, drop everything else I was doing and find a way to, if by chemtrails you mean a large conspiracy of government, I would drop everything else I was doing and risk my life to block it, because I believe that's the right thing to do.
I actually served 4 terms in the House. So after serving 8 years in the House, I went ahead and ran and was elected. That want control very much. Perhaps they would like to not have as much population to deal with. Most of it has to do with money, greed, and power. And these people are doing this and have been doing it for years and years now. It's really just beginning to come to the forefront. People are finally beginning to look up. I can't believe that for years and years this was going on over their heads and they hardly noticed it. But maybe it's because they've become so bold, people have begun to look at what is in this stuff.
I'm here today to report that each of the 6 rainwater samples I collected contain aluminum. Every single one is contaminated. Shows contamination of the air we breathe with aluminum particles. It's a neurotoxin. Alzheimer's comes to mind. All of these childhood diseases that are burgeoning. I can't think of a worse place for aluminum particles to be located than in the very air we breathe. Can you?
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe that's something that could be presented to Environmental Protection or the committee or...
The current program to try to actually change the entire globe's weather and to test how to manipulate the weather systems started in the mid-1990s. That's when suddenly ice crystal trails that had always gone away in seconds, max minutes, began to persist, even at low levels in hot weather or cold weather or at different altitudes. And you'll see trails right beside each other that dissipate, that are ice crystals, next to trails that don't dissipate and turn into huge cloud banks.
My name is...
Anyway, we've got another caller, 480. I think this is RD47, isn't it?
Yeah, it's me, Mark.
Hey, how are you tonight?
Good.
You made a chemtrail video, correct?
I've made two of them so far. I posted the one that it seemed to get the most play, so I posted it. It's part two. And one I just took over, right over, because I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's a resort town. And part one, I just walked up and down the streets asking people if they knew what was, you know, like the man on the street thing from our childhood. Can't remember who used to do that program. But I kind of did the same thing with my camera running and just asking people to look up because we were getting chemtrail sprayed really bad one day. And surprisingly, nobody actually knew what they were, of course. One guy even suggested he thought they were shooting missiles over us for the last few years, which I thought was interesting. But it's like you said, once you alert people to it, they seem to go, oh, that's what that is.
Now, what do you think the chemtrails are? Do you think, is it just the pollution that's coming out of jet exhaust? I wonder if they've added some kind of fuel additive or...
I heard the guy last night's interview that made the movie, What in the World Are They Spraying? He did another interview. I listened to it last night on YouTube. And I agree with him. It's coming out of fixed nozzles on the aircraft. They're not mixing it in the fuel now, but that doesn't mean they won't be. So it seems to be they're just like he was talking about. And I've seen pictures of these on YouTube before. They're just tanks inside of planes that they're spraying with nozzles, just like, you know, like crop dusters use out off the... I mean, it's exactly the same technology, really. Because here in Arizona, we use crop dusters too for chemicals, you know. And the same technology, just these orifices coming off the trailing edges of the aircraft wings or off nozzles where windows would have been. So...
Are these nozzles coming off commercial airliners?
No. In fact, that's one of the main reasons I wanted to call in. I was on Anthea's show a while back because she wanted me on. We talked about this, and what it is we have a place called Pinnell Air Park just south of me. Well, actually, so people would know more about it, it's north of Tucson, Arizona. And it's a known CIA base. I went down there because I have like over 280 videos going. I make videos of all kinds of things. Well, I went down there trying to get in because they claim they're mothballed airplanes. And I went down there, if they're mothballed airplanes, let me in. I'll make videos of them. So I drove down there and pulled up to the gate where there just happened to be a guard. And I asked the guard if I could come in. And the guard said, no, this is a restricted area. And I says, well, hell, they're just mothballed airplanes. He says, restricted area. What you got to do, pull inside and turn around and get out of here. So we pulled inside, and it was interesting. On the inside of the fence, on the inside, was a line that said, Evergreen Airlines. Well, Evergreen Airlines is the CIA Airlines. When I was in the Navy during Nam, it was Flying Tiger Airlines, and they've used other airlines. But now they're the contract airline for the CIA and the government and stuff like that. So I know that the chemtrail planes, a division of them, is being parked at Pinnell Air Park. And even if you Google Pinnell Air Park, and it's P-I-N-A-L Air Park, you'll get a bunch of hits of other people that are saying that, yes, it is a place for the chemtrail planes that are parked.
Well, do you think those pilots are aware that they're spraying people, or do they just fly? And
well, I'm sure they do. Interesting story. When I didn't want to believe the chemtrails, like most people, a friend of mine who was one of the original players in MUFON, and he dropped out for interesting reasons. He dropped out of MUFON. But anyway, he kept telling me, well, by fate, I'd done electrical work for a guy that was an airline pilot for Southwest Airlines, and we became good friends because he was a fighter pilot during Vietnam, and I was an aircraft mechanic during Vietnam. So we kind of, we kind of that bond thing, and I went to him, and just, I've told the story so many times, but it just is so true. I went to him, and I says, looked him in the face, and I said, you know the difference between chemtrails and contrails? And like in a hick voice, he got right in my face and says, well, I sure do. Like, you dumb shit, I fly through them, under them, and over them. And then I go, well, they must have told you what they are. He says, us pilots know nothing. And then he looks at me and he says, well, you're the writer, you're the investigator, you tell me what you know. And the first thing he wanted to know was who was flying the planes. Being a pilot himself, Mark, first thing he wanted to know, well, who's flying the planes, Ron? And I says, the best from my research, it's United Nations pilots, which would make sense because they're spraying every country in the world that we know of, except maybe we don't know China for sure. But all the countries that belong to NATO are getting sprayed.
Jeez. Jim Nichols mentioned this base that's out in Arizona.
Listened to the show the other night. He was talking. Yeah, he knew about it too. And I've written about it in several blogs before. You don't get in. And what it is they claim it's where they're mothballing airplanes. But if it's just mothballed airplanes, then why wouldn't you let me in? Get my point? You know what I mean? Why is Evergreen Airlines parked there? Why is it a secure area? And the CIA controlled it for a long time, and they turned it over to the Evergreen Airlines. But, hell, Evergreen Airlines is a division of the CIA.
I like that name, too, because it's so ironic.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it the way they do shit?
Absolutely. That's just totally
it.
Yeah,
that's how they do stuff, too.
I also wonder if there isn't more than one thing going on. Like, maybe they do have little, real spraying that's going on out of that base you're talking about. But here in Ohio, these planes are on the same path that the planes go on when they just go into land in Columbus, and I'm about an hour outside of Columbus. So I wonder if there's a spraying program and they've added something to the fuel on the normal airliners, or maybe I don't know what's going on exactly.
Well, I was an aircraft mechanic, and it's nothing's changed. And I talked to my airline pilot buddy about they're still burning what's called JP5 with jet propulsion fuel, and JP5 is just kerosene,
right?
And kerosene burns at like 450 degrees. I mean, that's why no planes hit the Twin Towers, and if they did hit the Twin Towers, kerosene wasn't going to melt beams because the flash point's so low. But they're just burning JP5, so they really couldn't be mixing anything because the jet engine technology has really never changed, except for the fans have gotten bigger. And when I say the fans, you see the big blades in front of the engines? Well, all that does is compress oxygen.
Right.
And then it mixes it with kerosene, and then that would be like you filling your mouth up with lighter fluid and then blowing all across the match is really no more than a jet engine. So I don't really think they've done it that way. And exactly what you're talking about, I think they do it that way to disguise their flight pattern, because we have the same thing here in Arizona, but you could say the planes are going between Dallas and, let's say, Los Angeles, but right outside of Los Angeles is Edwards Air Force Base and all kinds of military bases. And then the other direction, you have White Sands, New Mexico. all the bases in New Mexico. And in Tucson, you have Davis-Monthan Air Force Base and then Pinnell Airport. And then to the north of us, where they go north and south, now you have Area 51, Clark Air Force Base, and all the stuff around Nevada. So that they could be taken. But you really know it's up when they fly at angles. I mean, airliners fly from point A to point B.
Jim Nicholson.
And we've seen them here in Arizona flying. I've seen it in circles before, chemtrails.
That's
I've seen S marks before, or swirly marks before. So, yeah, and what they're, you know, something interesting too is that yesterday I noticed we were getting sprayed yesterday. And it was the white, milky sky, but some of the chemtrails they were laying down were about only 50 miles long, which I thought kind of odd.
That is strange.
You know, yeah, it is strange. You used to go from horizon to horizon. And like, that just seemed, that scared me, in fact.
Really?
I've gotten used to the chemtrails, but that scared me for some reason. What is this about now? And it's like, you know, how's the game changed? And when you see one airline go and then you see another airline flying right below it, spraying again, it makes you wonder if they're mixing chemicals.
Well, Jim Nichols says that chemtrails are a form of geoengineering, and that he said that Dr. Edward Teller had talked about using these chemtrails to decrease global warming or something. And I wonder if there is just some kind of program that the UN has already instituted. But I also think, you know, there's something that Michael Horn has said about there's something that has happened to the atmosphere of the planet. And we've reached some kind of tipping point so that even the regular contrails are persisting because of something that has happened to the environment. At least that's what Michael kind of alluded to the last time he was on the show.
Well, there's only one problem with that. I can watch contrails and chemtrails on the same afternoon and the plane's flying at the same altitude.
Isn't that strange?
So you have... You know, a really good friend of mine teaches computer science at Arizona State University, Gary Bitter. And he never believed me either until one day they're just flat-ass making S's in the sky. And the sky got an oily sheen to it. But one day you could see they were doing the condensation trails. I mean, the chemtrails. And then you've seen the jets flying between L.A. and, let's say, Dallas, Fort Worth, because I live in central Arizona.
Right.
So that's a natural flight path over us. And you could just see the comparison side by side. And those airlines fly at about 32 to 38,000 foot altitude, you know.
Right.
So they're all flying. It depends on, I think how it works. If you're going one direction, you're at a higher, and if you're going the other direction, you're at a lower, just like a highway. Get my point? So they're flying, and you see them, and here in Arizona where the sky is so big anyway, you see them every day, condensation trails and contrails, right, not in line with each other, but in the same sky. And in fact, on my video that I posted on here, there's I did a comparison for you over Tempe Town Lake where there you can see a contrails being made, and then you can see a chemtrail being made at the same time. So I don't buy that.
Do you think that the intention of the chemtrails is population reduction?
Well, you know, it could be a soft kill.
Yeah, I've heard that term.
And 'cause I'm 64 years old. When I was a kid, nobody died of cancer.
Right.
And like I was talking to a kid on the job site one day about it, and the kid goes, yeah, and now you wait to get it. So
yeah.
It could be. I mean, breathing aluminum and barium cannot be good for you.
Gosh.
You know, and there's three. Now, we have people here. And I sent, Anthea brought up on her show, but I sent her a thing. There's people here in Arizona live out on the Colorado River in a little community called Parker, Arizona. They're suing the federal government. It won't go anywhere, but they're suing them because they have a high concentrations of aluminum and barium in them.
God.
And they set down in the Colorado River, which is almost just barely above sea level when it goes through Arizona, southern part of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're getting a high. There's another group in New York suing them, and there's another group in California suing them too. They'll never go anywhere because that's all rigged nowadays. But I often wondered if it was because they were down the valley, they were getting a concentration of it. But I and then they were right underneath the trails coming out of L.A. But I don't. That's just a guess on my part. But it was in the thousands times more concentration. And if those people did start dying rapidly, we'd never know about it because the media is controlled.
Absolutely.
And then you have a group in, there's a group north of San Francisco suing the government too.
Really?
Yeah, well, they're suing, and what is there, another group, the high concentration of the chemicals too. Now, there's a site called Godlike Productions where you can just post anything you want. Like if you and I saw a UFO together, we just go on Godlike. You can post anything you want.
Yeah.
And if you're, and it's really a good site because if we're having heavy chemtrail spraying here in Arizona, I'll just go on there and say, we're getting sprayed over central Arizona. And then you have people pop on from all over the world saying, well, we're getting sprayed today and so-and-so, or we're in Ohio getting sprayed, or we're in Australia tonight and it's a full moon and we're getting sprayed, you know, and we're in Germany and we're, you know, get my point. So that's really a good collection house. But I discovered from some guys that were fishermen in the Pacific Ocean that they are doing a lot of spraying out over the ocean. And so the winds come out west. Well, the same thing where you live, the winds pretty much go from west to east because of the earth's spin. So people north of San Francisco, have you ever been to San Francisco? It goes up on hills just out of San Francisco, right, in the rolling hills. Where those people are getting a high concentration of barium aluminum, but I believe it's because they're catching it right off the ocean. It's hitting the mountain. See, the barium and aluminum is falling down, and then they're about 1,000 or 15 to 2,000, 3,000 foot high. And then I think by the time it hits them on the coast, they're just getting smacked with it. And they're probably just walking around the haze of barium and aluminum. And it's like, who killed Kennedy?
Right.
Such a well-kept secret.
And what really bothers me is that whoever is in charge of this program, they're just completely insane. It's like Nancy Red Star said, it's a death cult. It's hard for me to really wrap my mind around that.
It really is for me, too. I wrote today's blog was about Agenda 21. And I'm just starting to wonder if a lot of this stuff is off planet.
I don't know. It's crazy. It's absolutely. I've got a clip here about Monsanto GMO seeds.
And being anti-aluminum. Or something like being aluminum proof or something like that. I've heard about that.
Well, this is a poor guy up in Canada who some of Monsanto's seeds blew over on his crops, and he has all natural organic stuff, and the GMO seeds somehow contaminated his whole farm. Contaminated.
Right.
And then Monsanto turned around and sued him.
Yeah, I've read about that. I found that some of my research from my blogs, and they sued them for using for their stuff. Amazing.
Yeah,
so once
and then
the GMOs get out, eventually there will be no natural corn.
And who in their right mind would do such a thing? This is a level of insanity I can't even comprehend. You could call it alien, you can call it demonic, I don't know what to call it. It's like somebody is hell-bent on, and not just killing the people, it's going to end up destroying everything. I mean, it could be...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to sterilize the planets. If we're breathing it, the animals are breathing it.
Sure. Sure. So I wonder, you know,
soil.
What
and are they trying to sterilize the soil?
And then I wonder, you know, am I crazy for even thinking this?
I think over half the country is thinking that way now. Oh.
Well, Artie,
you know
I'm
going
to – I appreciate you calling in, man. I'm going to play a few more clips here while we got a little time left, man. Please call in anytime.
All right. Thanks, bud.
Talk to you later.
Right,
have a good night.
Bye-bye. You too, bye.
Well, I appreciate talking to you. We got RD47 tonight, and JoJo called in, and wow, these chemtrails are scary stuff. And I have to admit, I'm not a student of the chemtrail phenomena. I consider myself kind of waking up to the reality of this whole thing. And what do you do? I mean, come on. I mean, what are we dealing with here? It's absolutely hard to even wrap my mind around. And we got a clip about Monsanto here, and I think we'll probably end up the show here on this one, and we might squeeze another clip in, but this is about the GMO foods. One of the big players in what they're calling the Great Culling is Monsanto, and Monsanto is creating the GMO crops. Their GMO seeds are contaminating the world's crops, and a judge in Canada stated that if you are contaminated by Monsanto seeds, then basically your crops belong to Monsanto. Anyway, let's listen. Crazy.
No one should control nature. No one should control life. No one should have that right to put patents on nature and life. As long as my wife and I have life within us, we will always go down to fight for the rights of farmers, always to be able to use their seed from year to year. No one should take that right away from anyone. Judge ruled. Number one, if you are contaminated against your wishes by Monsanto's GMOs, you no longer own your seeds or plants. They become the ownership of a corporation, in this case, Monsanto. He also ruled we were not allowed to use our seeds or plants again. He also ruled that all our profit from our 1998 canola crop goes to Monsanto.
In 1997, as a result of a simple discovery, life changed dramatically for the 70-year-old farmer. A power line runs along the edge of Percy Schmeiser's property. As usual, the power company had the surrounding vegetation controlled by applying the herbicide Roundup. But in spite of this powerful chemical, volunteer canola plants continued to thrive among the weeds.
This canola was sprayed with four times the normal rate that you would spray Roundup, and yet it has not died. So it's a very powerful, resistant canola to Roundup. So it's definitely Monsanto's seed that is here. We've created a real big Frankenstein.
The pesticide Roundup produced by the multinational concern Monsanto is the most widely sold spray in the world. Monsanto made its canola resistant to Roundup. This means Roundup kills every plant without exception. Only Monsanto's genetically modified canola remains alive.
It was introduced without really much testing being done. And I think even at that time when it was introduced in the middle of the 90s, that even the governments were taken in by what these corporations told what it would do, like increased yields and less chemicals and more nutritious. And I think the governments even believed the corporations.
In 1996, the chemical giant Monsanto introduced its brand of canola into Canada. a brand resistant to the pesticide Roundup. In Schmeiss's region, three farmers agreed to plant Monsanto's new GMO canola. Due to a heavy storm during the harvest, freshly cut GMO canola drifted into Percy Schmeiss's fields. His work of 50 years of breeding was destroyed because his harvest was contaminated by Monsanto's seed.
It seemed like a time bomb, like a shock to me that my seed was ruined through cross-pollination or direct seed drift by a substance, by a seed I didn't want in my land. And so it was very disgusting and hard to take that I had lost something that I worked 50 years on.
Contamination and destruction of his own breed was irrevocably damaging to Percy Schmeiser. But on top of that, Monsanto turned him, the victim, into a culprit. August 1998, Schmeiser was sued by Monsanto for having illegally planted the corporation's patented GMO canola. He was to be forced by a court decision to pay damages in the amount of $100,000. And all this for a canola seed he did not want in the first place.
Under the patent law, it says to violate a patent, you have to use the patent. In my case, I never used Monsanto's patent. I never sprayed their chemical Roundup on my fields, so I never used their patent.
Well, there you go. That's a crazy story about GMOs. Genetically modified organisms, not a good thing at all. This will be the last clip tonight, probably. It's about Codex Alimentarius, which is an agenda that allows only low-potency supplements that cannot help your health at all. It's some kind of law that comes from the United Nations that's going to take all of the high-potency supplements like vitamin D3, which is extremely helpful in keeping you healthy during cold season. But their plan with Codex Alimentarius is to make it only legal that these very, very low-dose supplements can be sold. Mark Plotkin was a Harvard graduate that studied the shaman in the jungles of the Amazon to see how they use natural plants for healing. Then he went back to the jungles and he discovered that the pharmaceutical companies had already corrupted the shamans down in the jungles of the Amazon. So, well, at least we're educating ourselves about all of this. And let's listen to this last clip this evening, and we'll go from there.
Today I was doing some research, and I pulled up a document from the National Health Federation. And you're going to hear about this organization during the course of my talk tonight. And the opening paragraph here, it says, "Never heard of Codex?" That's exactly what they want. The Codex agenda, and we'll expand on this through the evening. The Codex agenda, only low-potency supplements available that will do nothing for your health. All or most foods genetically modified, and any beneficial supplements unavailable or sold only by prescription. Which is, by the way, exactly the way it is in Norway right now. And certain other countries are further down the road. But the key point here is, never heard of Codex? That's exactly what they want. So what I'm going to do tonight is basically put you on the spot. Because after tonight, you have to walk away from here and you have to make a decision. And it's going to be a very fundamental decision. And when I show you what's coming, I think you'll understand why it's an important decision. But let me start by introducing you to this guy here, Mark Plotkin. I first came across this guy, well, his books anyway, when I was doing some research in Central America about 10 years ago. And I read a book of his called The Shaman's Apprentice. And Plotkin is a Harvard graduate. And he went on a trip, basically his first trip to the Amazon was just as a gopher. He just fancied a break during his summer vacation, so he managed to finagle his way onto the trip as a sort of bag carrier. But he was so fascinated by that trip that he decided that he actually wanted to change his course of study and actually study ethnobotany. So he went back into the Amazon a couple of years later, this time on a different mission. And his mission was to go deep into the Amazon jungle and make contact with a tribe that had had almost no contact with the outside world. This took quite a while to set up, but he did this. And what he discovered there absolutely blew his mind. Because what he discovered was a culture that was really totally unspoiled by the Western world. Basically, the people, basically ran around naked. I mean, the only dress was that the men had a little piece of string around their waist. And after a few days, he realized that this string actually had a purpose. Because when these guys were hunting in the jungle, they used this piece of string to tuck a certain appendage out of the way so they didn't catch when they were jumping over the trees and the branches in the forest. But that was it. But what fascinated him was their medicines. And the fact that the shaman, the medicine man, basically was this repository of information that had been handed down generation after generation. And each shaman, as they reached a certain point in their life, would identify an apprentice within the tribe. And it would be the responsibility of the shaman to pass on that information and that knowledge to the apprentice. But Plotkin put the effort in to learn about the work of the shaman, and what he realized was that these guys had medicines, natural potions that they were mixing together that basically cured their diseases and their illnesses. And they really, had a very long life expectancy. So he actually made notes of this and took that information back to LA. And to fund his trips to the Amazon, he sold that information that he had picked up to a pharmaceutical company. Well, he went back to the Amazon, he went back up to meet that same tribe 4 years later. And when he came up to the landing stage on the river, first of all, what shocked him was these guys came down to meet him in cut-off Levi's and Hawaiian shirts. Gone was the string around the waist. But then what he saw next threw him into a rage, because he went into the shaman's hut, and gone were, all the vases of the local herbs and the local plants for making the medicines, and they were replaced with rows of bottles from the pharmaceutical companies. And when he looked closely, he realized that some of these medicines were the synthetics that had been created from the information that he'd given the pharmaceutical company sold to the pharmaceutical company 4 years previously.
Well, there you go. I appreciate everyone coming to the show. I appreciate JoJo and RD47 for calling in. Thanks, After Dark Radio, Crone, Dale Ray 19, Eve One Heart. We've got about a dozen or so anonymous guests in. Jeff 72, Moonchild, Papa Bear 1, RD47, Shake, and William Egan. If you guys want to be on the email list for the show, I've just put it into the chat room at exopoliticsohio@gmail.com. If you send me a little email there, I'll put you on the list. And those people that are anonymous guests, you can use that email list if you want to know when the show is going to start. Or you can make yourselves a Blog Talk profile and then just follow the show. It's up to you. I appreciate everyone coming in the show this evening. Saturday night at 9 p.m. we'll be talking to Jim Nichols. And I think Tolek will be back as well, and that's 9 p.m. Eastern, January the 7th. I've got Dr. Jack Pruitt lined up for coming on, and I think he'll be on the show with Dr. Joy Pugh either the 21st or the 22nd. I'm working on trying to get Stuart Swerdlow back from on the show. I haven't heard back from him. And I've got some other things lined up for near the end of the month I'm working on. I appreciate everyone coming. Hope you all had a good Christmas and a happy new year, and we'll be seeing you soon. Good evening, everyone.